This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Ukrainian authorities said on Wednesday they thwarted a Russian attack on Kyiv and the surrounding region as their air defense system destroyed 13 explosive-laden drones. An official said drone wreckage damaged 5 buildings. No casualties were reported. The attempted strikes underlined the continued vulnerability of Ukraine's capital, but also highlighted Ukraine's claims of increasing efficiency in intercepting weapons. The United States plans to commit $55 billion U.S. dollars to Africa over the next 3 years, according to White House officials. The announcement comes as the administration of President Joe Biden hosts a summit this week with African leaders. Details from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
Speaking to African leaders Wednesday at a business forum, President Joe Biden said the United States is all in on Africa's future.
And improving Africa's infrastructure is essential to our vision of building a stronger global economy that can better withstand the kinds of shocks that we've seen in the past few years.
And he announced new trade opportunities and infrastructure commitments, including for clean energy and the digital economy. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
French supporters celebrated on the Champs-Élysées near the Arc de Triomphe on Wednesday after a World Cup semifinal between France and Morocco as Les Bleus won 2-0 to reach the final for a second time in a row. Morocco had a shot at becoming the first African nation to reach a World Cup final, but now France is poised to become the first team to retain their World Cup title in 60 years on Sunday. This is VOA News. The World Health Organization said Wednesday it hopes that COVID-19 and Mpox will no longer be public health emergencies in 2023, as both diseases end their most dangerous phase. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said one of the chief lessons from the COVID-19 pandemic was that countries had to respond quickly to surprise outbreaks.
But we have come a long way. We're hopeful that at some point next year, we will be able to say that COVID-19 is no longer a global health emergency.
Tedros says the WHO's emergency committee, which advises on declarations of public health emergencies of international concern, will be discussing what the end of the emergency phase might look like when they meet in January. Iran was ousted from a United Nations women's body on a Wednesday for policies contrary to the rights of women and girls, a move proposed by the United States after Tehran's brutal crackdown on protest sparked by the death of a young woman in custody.
The commission is the premier UN body for promoting gender equality and empowering women. It cannot do its important work if it's being undermined from within. Iran's membership at this moment is an ugly stain on the commission's credibility.
U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas Greenfield, Iran's UN ambassador, called the U.S. move as illegal, describing the United States as a bully. Peru's new government has imposed a police state amid violent protests following the ouster of President Pedro Castillo. The defense minister said the military will support national police in restricting the rights of people across the Andean nation to gather and move and be free from search and seizure. Peru's new president, Dina Boluarte, has pleaded for calm and raised the possibility of scheduling general elections for a year from now. Demonstrators have called for immediate elections for the presidency and for all of Congress. The World Health Organization said on Wednesday the flare-up in COVID-19 cases in China was well underway before the government began easing restrictions. Officials in China warned that cases are rising rapidly in Beijing after the government abruptly abandoned its zero-COVID policy, scrapping mass testing and quarantines after nearly 3 years of attempting to stamp out the virus. But WHO Emergencies Chief Michael Ryan told reporters that the explosion of cases in China was not due to the lifting of COVID restrictions. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Thursday, December 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the United States commits over $20 billion to healthcare programs in Africa for the next 3 years.
And improving Africa's infrastructure is essential to our vision of building a stronger global economy that can better withstand the kinds of shocks that we've seen in the past few years.
Ukraine awarded European Union's top human rights prize for resistance to Russia's invasion.
The EU award, named after Soviet dissident Andrei Sakharov, was created in 1988 to honor individuals or groups who defend human rights.
And France heads back to the World Cup final for a much-anticipated clash with Argentina. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The United States plans to commit over $20 billion to health care programs in Africa for the next 3 years as part of a $55 billion aid package to the continent. The announcement comes as the administration of President Joe Biden hosts a three-day meeting with African leaders. Details from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
Speaking to African leaders Wednesday at a business forum, President Joe Biden said the United States is all in on Africa's future. And he announced new trade opportunities and infrastructure commitments, including for clean energy and the digital economy.
And improving Africa's infrastructure is essential to our vision of building a stronger global economy that can better withstand the kinds of shocks that we've seen in the past few years.
The U.S. president is facing some criticism for not interacting individually with the visiting African leaders. Administration officials say soon, Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, and some cabinet secretaries will individually be visiting Africa for detailed discussions. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
And Standard Bank, the largest bank in Africa, hosted a breakfast in Washington on the sidelines of the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in support of the Africa Women's Impact Fund Initiative, or AWIF. Lindeka Zeze is the Executive Head of Strategic Partnership for Standard Bank. She tells VOA's Carol Van Damme the initiative's purpose is to overcome systematic barriers and built-in investor biases by enabling women-owned and women-led funds in Africa and empowering women financial leaders to drive growth.
Women tend to do better in terms of if you're a bank. You know, if you look at how they pay back their loans, the NPL scores are better for women than they are for men. And there's always seems to be a multiplier effect for women. Also in the fund management businesses, you've seen a lot more performance that seems to come out of there. And also look at the during COVID, which countries fared better? Mostly those that were led by women presidents.
So how specifically is Standard Bank helping women get started in running their own businesses and people like you, you know, who are women at Standard Bank and other banks in Africa?
Internally first, it starts at home. So the Standard Bank, currently, you have 42% of senior women that are in the leadership space and 36 that are coming through, 6 at the board level, and our chair is a woman. And we have serious ambitions for the next coming years. How this is done, we've partnered. So the African Women Impact Fund, it is an initiative of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa and its partners. That is the Office of the AU of the Special Envoy Women and Peace and Security, UN Women and others. Everything that is really required in the middle office, it allows them to focus on what they need to do. And it also creates a pipeline of others that will eventually be more of instead of just 5.
We've heard a lot about the permitting process. A lot of governments put on these extra bureaucratic type of measures that they have to meet. Will your bank be able to step in and kind of streamline that for women who are trying to get started?
So we're taking away that pain of actually having to build what you require to be an established BlackRock, because you don't have that facility. We know as banks, we've experienced that. The cost of complying with regulation has been humongous. It's actually draining. It's actually literally squeezing your profits, your margins. So actually being able to do that for businesses, for women businesses, makes them to be able to focus more on their businesses, and it takes away that big challenge that is necessary. So you can focus your mind on what everybody else who's sitting at BlackRock or anywhere else is doing.
You've been doing this for a while, obviously. Give us one example of how that works when the bank steps in and helps a woman so that she doesn't have to worry about all those regulations on her own.
I want to be clear that the bank, we sponsor this. We partnered with the MIDA Advisors, which is an implementation partner for trade and investment for USAID, on their mission on the continent, and we partnered with the stakeholders that I've mentioned. So we operationalizing, but we've brought in an expert in the fund manager space because that's not our game, right? So we've brought in the investment manager that is Riscura. So what it means is that not only do we provide the right ecosystem, that enabling environment, but the bank is stepping in because while women are setting up their businesses, there's costs that they need, like working capital. So we have the foundation, that way we can provide grants. Plus also the bank is part of that, does that business. We also have our equity finance team that can also come in into this space. But more than that, you're going to find that within Standard Bank, we've got programs that we run across the continent. We've got Dada in Kenya. We've got Akananzi in Zambia. We're doing another one in Tanzania. And we're looking to scale these. We've partnered with IFC across the continent.
Besides what you're doing as the bank management goes, the bank side of it, do the women have to meet certain benchmarks that participate in this?
Yes, they have to. So you have where it's like any other business. So it's not like a special Olympics club. So the multi-manager business looks after any other business. Doesn't matter what gender you are, looks after all of them. It's just that there's a specific focus in supporting women.
That's Linde Kadzeze, Executive Head of Standard Bank Strategic Partnership in Johannesburg and Chair of the Africa Women's Impact Fund Initiative. She was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam in Washington. Ukrainian authorities say they thwarted a Russian attack on Kyiv and the surrounding region as their air defense systems destroyed 13 explosive-laden drones. An official said drone wreckage damaged 5 buildings. This as the people of Ukraine have been awarded the European Union's top human rights prize for their resistance to Russia's invasion and ongoing war. Associated Press correspondent Charles de la Desma reports.
The EU award, named after Soviet dissident Andrei Sakharov, was created in 1988 to honour individuals or groups who defend human rights. European Parliament President Roberta Metsola announces this year's award.
We meet to honour our 2022 Sakharov Prize laureates, the brave people of Ukraine, represented by their president, elected leaders, and civil society. Ukrainians who have already fought hard and sacrificed so much for their freedom and our values.
Metsola says ordinary citizens have stood up to face down Russian troops with nothing but pride as their weapons, adding, "We stand with Ukraine. We will not look away." I'm Charles de la Desma.
Thank you, Charles. And a record-breaking drought in the Horn of Africa has affected half the population of Somalia, including in the breakaway region of Somaliland. The United Nations says if more aid does not arrive soon, Somalia will suffer its worst farming in half a century. Juma Majanga reports from Boko, Somaliland, one of the affected areas.
It is lunchtime at Hibak Hussein's rag-touched hut in Ainabo camp for the internally displaced in Somaliland's Buro district. Today, the family is eating donated white rice. The 26-year-old mother of four moved here a couple of months ago after walking more than 100 kilometers with her children to seek aid after drought killed all her livestock, which she says was her only source of livelihood. Hussein says she was left with nothing and didn't want to end up dying with her children in the forest. So, she moved to the camp in search of relief. But even in the camp, life has not been easy. Hussein says sometimes she doesn't have any food to feed her children and they are forced to go to bed hungry. As a mother, she says, she feels very pained about that. Many Somalis are nomadic pastoralists, with livestock diminished by deadly drought affecting 7.8 million people across Somalia. Large populations have moved to IDP camps to seek relief aid. Hussein is among the 1.6 million the UN High Commission for Refugees says have been displaced by drought in the country in 2022. More than 300,000 more are facing famine according to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. Amran Shire is the Humanitarian Program Manager for CARE International in Somaliland.
We are actually receiving a limitless number of people dropping out from their nomadic pastoral lifestyle because the drought is so severe that there's no pasture for livestock, there's no water for both livestock and human consumption.
More than 40 million people are struggling with hunger, fueled by a record drought in the Horn of Africa that has killed more than 10 million animals. Juma Majanga for VOA News, Buro, Somaliland.
In other news, France and Kylian Mbappe are headed back to the World Cup final for a much-anticipated matchup with Lionel Messi after ending Morocco's historic run at soccer's biggest tournament. France beat Africa's first-ever semifinalist 2-0, with Mbappe playing a role in the goals by Theo Hernandez in the 5th minute and then substitute Randal Kolo Muani in the 79th. France will head into Saturday's title match against Argentina, looking to become the first team to retain the World Cup since Brazil did that in 1962. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. New Zealand has passed tobacco reforms to ban smoking for the next generation. Laws passed by Parliament on Tuesday mean that New Zealanders born after 28 will not be able to legally buy cigarettes or tobacco. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
New Zealand's smoking rate is already at historic lows. 8% of adults smoke every day, according to government figures, although almost a fifth of indigenous Maori people smoke. But authorities want to drive consumption down even further, to below 5% by 2025. The aim, they say, is to stamp out smoking altogether. Legislation passed Tuesday by Parliament in Wellington effectively imposes a lifetime ban on young New Zealanders buying cigarettes. The reforms mandate that tobacco products can never be sold to individuals born on or after January 1, 2009. The laws are thought to be the first of their kind anywhere in the world. The number of stores allowed to sell cigarettes will be reduced from 6,000 to just 600 nationwide. The legal amount of nicotine permitted in tobacco products will also be cut. Critics of the changes have warned they could encourage an illicit market in tobacco products. Professor Nick Wilson is the head of the Public Health Department at the University of Otago. He told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Wednesday that gradually lifting the legal age of tobacco consumption is part of a raft of anti-smoking measures.
That is just one strand really off this package, and it may actually be the least critical part of the package, which also involves retail outlet reduction and removing nicotine from tobacco. And the removing nicotine from tobacco is really probably by far the most critical part of what this law is doing.
The New Zealand government has said that stricter tobacco laws were needed to help thousands of people live longer, healthier lives. Officials have insisted that billions of dollars would be saved by not needing to treat the illnesses caused by smoking. Australia has led the world on tobacco control, with graphic health warnings, along with plain packaging laws introduced in 2012 and high taxes. The Australian Bureau of Statistics reported in 2021 that 1 in 10 adults, or 2.1 million people, were daily smokers. While smoking rates have fallen in many countries, they remain stubbornly high in others, particularly in Southeast Asia and parts of Europe, according to the World Health Organization. The WHO says tobacco use is the world's single biggest cause of preventable death and non-communicable disease. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Transgender and gender non-conforming individuals typically go through a process of choosing a new name to reflect their gender identity. But how does that one decide? VOA's Tina Trent meets a 19-year-old who created an app to help.
19-year-old Joshua Tint considers himself a cisgender or cis man. one who identifies with the gender assigned to him at birth. But there were times when he wasn't so sure.
Going through high school, I would do things like, you know, paint my nails. I might wear more feminine clothing. Even cis people like me question over the course of their life, am I really, you know, a man? Am I really cis? Am I trans?
Spurred by his own experience and that of friends, Tint decided to build an app that explores a major part of the gender identity process, the name change. Discover Me lets users try different names and sets of pronouns. The app, winner of a recent Apple student contest, comes as debate roils nationwide about the rights of transgender youth, with opponents contending that parents should have the final say on a child's gender identity. The app places a proposed name in various sample sentences.
You can swipe left or right in order to indicate whether or not you like the name and pronouns in that piece of sample text. You can also, if you want, check out different contexts. So we have casual, academic, and professional, which will change the type of sample text that you're going to see.
Before you're ready to tell the world, most people need to spend some time trying that on. And an app like this will make that a little bit easier to see what it's going to feel like to be referred to by that name and to be referred to by different pronouns.
Olivia Hunt is a policy director at the National Center for Transgender Equality. She says being called by one's chosen name can be positive for the mental health of trans and non-binary youth. Again, Joshua Tint.
I mean, your name is a small thing, but it's how you introduce yourself to the world. It's massively significant in shaping your identity.
It's that understanding that drives Tint to create tools to help others, whether they identify as a he, she, or they. Tina Trin, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's Artemis 1 unmanned lunar mission came to an end on Sunday, December 11th, when its Orion spacecraft splashed down into the Pacific Ocean at 1740 UTC. The mission served as a flight test for the Orion spacecraft, the powerful new Space Launch System rocket, and the upgraded exploration ground systems at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. According to a NASA press release, over its 25-and-a-half-day mission, Artemis performed two lunar flybys, which brought the Orion spacecraft to within 129 kilometers of the moon's surface and flying to nearly 435,000 kilometers from Earth at its furthest point. The U.S. Space Agency used the mission to check out the Orion in the severe environment of deep space before trying to fly humans to the moon aboard Artemis II, which is now scheduled for launch in 2024. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We're bringing women's voices to the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women.
Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
It really was powerful because it showed what is possible when men and women band together and say enough is enough.
We hear your voices, women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation. Each week, right here on The Voice of America, on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, a former Minneapolis police officer who assisted in the restraint that led to the death of George Floyd, was just sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. Much is known about George Floyd's death, but little about his life. On this edition of the program, we present an encore conversation with Tolu Olorunipa, co-author of the acclaimed book, His Name is George Floyd. That's Press Conference USA, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including President Joe Biden hosts the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in Washington, where African leaders and those in the private sector and diaspora face additional challenges brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic and the war in Ukraine. This and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. On this last U.S. politics edition of Encounter, we take stock of a divided Congress, the result of the November midterm elections, and what can the current Democratic Congress achieve in its waning days of 2022? John Fortier and Jim Kessler weigh in on the lame duck session and discuss challenges facing the razor-thin Republican majority in 2023. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedofo in Washington, wishing you a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has expressed deep concern over the recent arrest of a prominent labor union leader in Cambodia. Chiem Sitaw, a union leader at the Naga World Casino in Phnom Penh, was arrested on November 26th on her return from the International Trade Union Confederation World Conference in Melbourne, Australia. In a statement issued shortly after her arrest, State Department spokesperson Ned Price said, "We urge Cambodian authorities to release Chiem Sitaw and end prosecutions against trade unionists exercising their rights to freedom of association and peaceful assembly, drop charges against them, and move to constructively resolve their disputes." Chiem Sitaw was first arrested in January 2022 after leading a large demonstration of union members calling for the reinstatement of hundreds of Naga World workers, alleging that workers had been dismissed from their positions improperly. Authorities used violent tactics to suppress peaceful protesters, including reportedly shoving and hitting demonstrators during protests on June 27th and August 11th. Authorities have also been accused of using public health laws to break up protests by forcing striking workers onto buses and transporting them to quarantine facilities to be held overnight. The Cambodian government labeled the strike illegal and charged Chiem Sitaw with incitement to commit a felony by disturbing the social order. The State Department's most recent report on human rights in Cambodia describes that charge as a vague standard commonly used to suppress and punish peaceful political speech and dissent. Chiem Sitaw was released on bail in March. The Cambodian government claims she was rearrested for violating the terms of her bail by traveling abroad. She and her attorneys deny that the court informed Sitaw of the restrictions. "We continue to call on the Cambodian government," said spokesperson Price, "to uphold its obligations and commitments and mediate a resolution between Naga World and the labor union representing terminated employees. People in Cambodia, like people everywhere, must be permitted to exercise their human rights without fear of government retaliation and repression."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.